este sentido, lo que asegura es que el sector más conservador tendría los recursos disponibles para movilizar su base, para hacer su trabajo de base entre los sectores más militantes que tiene, pero que en realidad no va a permitir democratizar el proceso, sino más bien mantener su control por parte de un sector pequeño, adinerado, poderoso, y el tráfico de influencias seguirá siendo el factor determinante en la selección de candidatos. También complica la situación para personas, digamos, entre los grupos progresistas que buscan cambios electorales, porque ahora, para poder participar, tendrán que vender sus intereses al postor más rico de la contienda.
¿Y qué tal si se introduce en la competencia electoral el sistema de millones y millones de seres humanos haciendo campaña de puerta en puerta sin utilizar el dinero?
Pues yo creo que eso sería importante, especialmente a nivel de distrito, porque vemos que eso sería diferencia, por ejemplo, en elecciones puntuales, donde hay un distrito donde está polarizado, o hay un distrito donde existen diferentes contiendas, o donde hay una tradición de participación política. Pero eso no es el caso de todos los distritos. Requiere una activación popular, requiere un compromiso por parte de sectores, y también inquiere la democratización de ese proceso para poder incluir a estos sectores que históricamente han sido excluidos. Pero sí podría tener un factor importante, pero a nivel nacional creo que se pierde un poco ese espacio, porque estamos hablando de elecciones nacionales muy reñidas, donde la diferencia podría ser simplemente unos cuantos cientos de miles de votos, y ahí es muy difícil una campaña a ese nivel.
¿Piensa usted que es prematuro para nosotros en este momento tratar de anticipar cuál será el resultado de la próxima contienda electoral ahora con las nuevas reglas del juego?
Yo creo que no. Ya estamos viendo que hay algunas encuestas que señalan que los republicanos posiblemente recuperen el Senado, se le complique la situación política a Barack Obama y a la vez también para los demócratas, porque hasta el momento han mantenido tener un cierto balance entre el Senado y la Cámara de Representantes, y eso se podría perder en esta próxima elección, especialmente con ahora un cheque ilimitado por parte de los sectores más ricos, más poderosos, y creo que eso puede ser factor determinante. Obviamente, a nivel nacional, en la próxima contienda presidencial, veremos que ambos partidos se abocarán a tratar de recabar fondos ilimitados ahora para asegurar su competencia.
Era Miguel Tinker Salas, profesor de Historia y Estudios Latinoamericanos en el Colegio de Pomona, California, en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
I'm going to tell you a number of things, but you really only have to remember two words.
Estás escuchando el Informativo Pacífica.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestro blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com.
Si deseas comunicarte con nosotros, puedes escribirnos al correo electrónico pueblosinfronteras@gmail.com.
El próximo domingo el pueblo de Costa Rica está convocado a participar en las elecciones presidenciales, donde solo habrá un candidato.
A pocos días de celebrar elecciones presidenciales, hay quienes se aprestan a sacar su documento de identidad. Una segunda ronda marcada por la renuncia hace casi un mes a la campaña electoral del aspirante oficialista.
Fue una decisión política sorpresiva, yo creo que para todos los costarricenses, la decisión del candidato Araya de no participar más en actividades proselitistas no ha tenido ningún impacto a nivel jurídico, porque se le aclaró desde el principio que las candidaturas en Costa Rica son irrenunciables.
Pero según muchos, se prestó a confusión y ha sacudido las opiniones políticas en este país.
Es un caso muy extraño, en realidad, yo es la primera vez que lo veo. Pero sí, no sé, siento que es como una falta de respeto del candidato opositor, no, oficialista, a retirarse de la campaña y esperando como obtener votos o por lástima.
Como que queda la puerta abierta para decir, ah, mira, como tal lo hice, yo también. Entonces es como ya una excusa más para ser irresponsable.
El desencanto también se nota en estos días.
Para el lado mío, yo no. Negativo todo, no quiero ni votar ni nada.
Y aunque en las calles no se percibe un ambiente electoral, resalta la importancia de acudir a las urnas.
Más que la necesidad de ir a votar es la fiesta que se vive. Y al final nosotros somos fiesteros, entonces la democracia es parte del fútbol y la política.
Hoy es más importante que nunca.
Una campaña electoral cerrando con un solo candidato participante, Guillermo Solís, del partido Acción Ciudadana, favorito en las encuestas. Adriana Sibori, Telesur, San José, Costa Rica.
Residentes de una pequeña localidad en Argentina han logrado frenar a la multimillonaria corporación Monsanto, que pretende instalar una gigantesca planta de semillas transgénicas en el área. Los vecinos de la localidad de Malvinas, Argentinas, instalaron un campamento de resistencia para evitar que Monsanto instalara su mayor planta de secado de semillas transgénicas en el mundo. Ignacio Jubilla, de Noticias RT, con los detalles.
Hace 5 meses que se empezó a levantar este campamento, empezó con 3-4 carpas, un fuego y la gente alrededor de la planta, y bueno, la colaboración de cientos de personas se fue levantando así, construcciones de barro, de palo, de adobe.
La lucha comenzó cuando parecía que ya no se podía hacer nada. Una inversión de 160 millones de dólares y la creación de 400 puestos de trabajo en una de las poblaciones más pobres de la región. Con esas cartas, Monsanto jugaba en la Argentina la instalación de su mayor planta de secado de semillas transgénicas del mundo.
Dimos la sorpresa en el aspecto de que a pesar de eso no nos comimos, quizá no recibimos todo tal cual como parecía ser, en el sentido de que no nos creímos el cuento del progreso a cuesta de cualquier cosa.
Ante la falta de respuesta a los primeros reclamos sobre los efectos que esta industria provocaría en la salud de los pobladores, los vecinos de Malvinas Argentinas y ecologistas autoconvocados levantaron el campamento para bloquear el acceso al predio.
Una es la contribución a la cadena del modelo productivo que ya está impuesto, y otra es la contaminación local que provocaría esta planta aquí en Malvinas Argentinas, de la cual sí somos afectados directos porque vivimos a escasos metros de donde se pretende instalar la planta.
Resistiendo brutales represiones, el acampe logró que se hiciera foco en el conflicto. La justicia ordenó paralizar las obras hasta que se presente un debido informe de impacto ambiental, y la presión social llevó al gobierno de la provincia a dar marcha atrás en su aprobación al proyecto.
Hay un sinnúmero de informes que dan cuenta de que va a afectar de manera negativa el ambiente, es decir, va a contaminar. Los vecinos no quieren la planta, por lo tanto, es muy improbable que se instale, es muy improbable.
La producción agrícola a gran escala y el uso de agrotóxicos están fuertemente instalados en toda la región latinoamericana, donde sin evaluar sus efectos, se generan miles de millones de dólares por la exportación principalmente de soja y maíz transgénicos a los países del primer mundo. Para quienes llevan adelante esta lucha, sin embargo, los pequeños triunfos abren una puerta a la esperanza.
A partir de esto se empezó a pensar en qué se come, qué se produce, de qué vivimos. A lo mejor son reflexiones demasiado profundas, pero por lo menos en algunas personas empezaron a darse.
Con el revés judicial y el de la provincia, ahora es el gobierno local el que deberá definir si le da o no a Monsanto la posibilidad de presentar un nuevo informe de impacto ambiental. En ese caso, esta vez, se deberá llamar a una consulta popular. Por ahora, el ambicioso proyecto es apenas esto, un enorme esqueleto de hierro custodiado de sol a sol por el acampe de los asambleístas. Mientras continúan las indefiniciones políticas, ellos aseguran que van a continuar su lucha para que este lugar quede así y se convierta con el tiempo en un símbolo del triunfo de una pequeña comunidad que un día decidió enfrentar a un gigante. Ignacio Jubilla, Malvinas Argentinas, provincia de Córdoba.
En la República Argentina, el 2 de abril se observa el Día del Veterano y se recuerda a los caídos en el conflicto armado entre su país y Gran Bretaña. En esa fecha, ambas naciones se disputaban el control de las Islas Malvinas, ocupadas por los ingleses en el siglo XIX. La presidenta Cristina Fernández de Kirchner habló ante su pueblo argentino para recordarles los días trágicos de la guerra, así como aclararles que el amor a la patria es el amor al prójimo, el amor al otro.
Si de algo me siento plena de amor, es haber logrado, con el acompañamiento de todos los mandatarios de la América Latina, de la UNASUR, del MERCOSUR, de la CELAC, haber convertido a Malvinas ya no en una causa nacional, sino en una causa regional de soberanía y en una causa global de lucha contra el colonialismo.
Por su parte, el periodista y analista internacional Jorge Kreyes, citando a la primera mandataria argentina, apuntó a los planes estratégicos de Gran Bretaña y sus aliados de la Organización del Tratado del Atlántico Norte y su líder, los Estados Unidos de Norteamérica.
La presencia británica en las Malvinas tiene que ver con una cuestión estratégica
que es tener una base militar nuclear de la OTAN en el Atlántico Sur. Este señalamiento sin duda va a tener repercusiones en la relación de Argentina con todas las potencias que forman parte de esa alianza agresiva militar de carácter internacional que es la OTAN y que está encabezada por los Estados Unidos.
De acuerdo a Horacio Ricciardelli, héroe argentino de la Guerra de Malvinas y vicecomodoro de la Fuerza Aérea Argentina, el archipiélago tiene muchas riquezas naturales como petróleo, gas, minerales y pesca. Además de esos factores geopolíticos, dice, esa región es muy importante debido a que sirve como pasaje a unos 200.000 buques al año del Océano Atlántico al Pacífico y viceversa. Por su parte, el analista político Daniel Stulin señala que la ocupación de las Islas Malvinas fue provocada por una mezcla de duplicidad por parte de la monarquía británica y agentes cómplices de la monarquía dentro del gobierno de los Estados Unidos. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Michel Chosudovsky, un economista canadiense, director del Centro de Investigación sobre la Globalización, sostiene que en Ucrania el Fondo Monetario Internacional aplicará un paquete económico que empobrecerá más a la población. Entrevistado por la Radio del Sur, el profesor emérito de Economía de la Universidad de Ottawa inicia explicando quién estuvo detrás de la llamada revolución en Ucrania.
Una operación de protesta apoyado por Estados Unidos y también la Unión Europea, que empezó en el mes de diciembre. Esa protesta era también integrado por elementos de extrema derecha, incluyendo grupos neofascistas. Y es muy importante subrayar que la protesta no era una protesta, había elementos de protesta, pero había también grupos armados paramilitares que estaban metidos en actos de violencia, tanto en contra de civiles que en contra de la policía. El motivo de la protesta era el rechazo del expresidente Yanukovych de entrar en un convenio con la Unión Europea y al mismo tiempo de entrar en un convenio con el Fondo Monetario. Y la motivación del expresidente era que ese convenio llevaría un impacto social y un empobrecimiento dramático de la población. El expresidente no es que es un modelo, digamos, de comportamiento político, porque en el pasado él tuvo vínculos con el Fondo Monetario y aceptó sus condiciones, pero yo creo que a rechazar el convenio con la Unión Europea en el contexto de comercio, de finanzas, etcétera, y al mismo tiempo ligado a esto el rechazo del Fondo Monetario, eso fue la clave. Y la llamada protesta era motivado por la noción de cambio de régimen, es decir, de instalar un nuevo gobierno que obedece a Washington, ¿no es cierto? Y ya tenemos mucha información al respecto, a saber que había una conspiración por parte de Estados Unidos, de la Unión Europea, de instalar un gobierno y de derrocar un presidente elegido en las normas democráticas. En Venezuela uno puede enfocar este tema porque es también un tema que ha afectado la realidad nacional y el proceso histórico de Venezuela. Ahora, ¿qué tenemos en Ucrania? Tenemos un gobierno de coalición con un primer ministro que se llama Yatsenyuk. Este primer ministro incluso ha sido seleccionado por Washington.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Richard Macías, Lolita Macías y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
This is Free Radio. Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM.
also known as Freak Radio on the internet, www.freakradio.org. Coming up next, Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, with audio of an arrest at City Council on Tuesday and some updates from the campus struggle for decent wages, class size, and other issues being fought by strikers for the last 2 days. Stay tuned.
The hallway, a problem, for only one reason, that president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless, our problem, for only one reason, our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the
And that's the beginning of Five, singing Land. Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We're going to launch right into some earlier interviews and then go directly to the audio of the City Council meeting of April 1st, I guess it was, April Fool's Day indeed, when I was arrested for replacing my audio recorder in the spot where it's always been, near the dais of the City Council where Speaker's Podium. And when I and it was handed back to me by the police, I simply put it back there because as a reporter, it's important for me to have these kinds of interviews from City Council, this kind of recording, in order to, I think, effectively and meaningfully and in a timely manner broadcast what I broadcast. And I'll be talking more about that, but first, let's hear a little from the street.
So we're down on Pacific Avenue. It's a windy but sunny day. It's March 30th, 2014. In front of Pacific Trading Company, we've just closed its doors to be free from the strumming. Let's listen to a little Espanol. We have two ukuleles. One wooden platform, and of course, an illegal group of three people playing in an area outside of 12 square feet within 14 feet of the building. But I'm not going to tell. Are you?
No, definitely not. The music's good.
Well, it is 2:10, and a pleasant afternoon until they're told to move along, of course. The Pacific Trading Company, at least notorious a decade ago for harassing Cosmic Chris out here, or perhaps one of the other performers, may or may not respond to this by doing more than closing their doors. And there are shoes on the sidewalk on Oh My Soul, in a series of long tables, two of them extending to at least six, seven square feet. Mr. Twister is on the sidewalk. We're here with...
By 7 square feet, I mean 14 square feet. 7 squares being 14 square feet, I think. Point being that the tables don't have permits. They're a violation of the downtown ordinances as well.
Mr. Twister, who's not spending as much time on the sidewalk as he used to. Are you spending less time these days now that the great Morgani is gone?
Well, it's a little harder without so many people of my own kind to look around. It became a little frustrating when I looked down the street and seeing I may be the only one left. I'm the last dinosaur. I'm the last mammoth.
And there you have it. The infamous Twister Man is still twisting away in front of Marini's, and hopefully we'll twist on, as they say.
Remember, you know that guy they called Willy Wonka? Complete act of fiction. Okay, first of all...
Mr. Twister is called a Twister Man. He's a clown on Pacific Avenue that makes balloon toys for children. He twists balloons into animal shapes.
Mr. Marini's been inside making candy here since 1915. Come on down, folks. You want to see who the real candy man is.
Woo! You're getting paid for this kind of commercial announcement there, Corey?
Actually, I get my weight in chocolate a year.
Really?
It's the kind of thing I've had since I was 10 years old. And since I've weighed more every year since I was 10, it's actually costing them more every year.
You don't look that fat, I got to tell you. Anything from the street you want to report that's happened that you think should be noted? Not saying you should have anything, but if you do, you know.
I'm really weary about talent anymore because when someone shows some talent, they make it all right.
Well, our sidewalks are for commercial purposes, Mr. Corey McDonald. Don't you understand that, Mr. Clown?
But we serve the public. We serve our purpose, and when we're done, we're pretty much the advertising that brings people down. It's an entire experience, inside and out.
Well, perhaps you can persuade Mayor Robinson to change the rules.
I've tried to persuade many mayors to do many things, but as usual, a fool upon the stage is sound in fury, spinning his hour up and down the boards, signifying nothing.
Well, I don't know. You seem to...
I just quoted that, but true.
It's all right. It's all right. I'm going to let you get back to your good work and give you a special Amaretti cookie snap to help you with your good job.
Woo! I got an Amaretti cookie snap.
That's it. And the wind is blowing. You can probably hear it on this tape. And the marimba band is plunking away down here. Probably have a permit, but... And there's a couple of doggies, a lot of people watching. All right. Let's step up the pace. Step up the pace. You have a permit for this? All right, then. I'm keeping an eye on you. Well, we're here with an artist here in front of a certain business, whose name we won't mention. It's 10 to 3, and the marimba band is having a great time across the street. What's your name?
Star.
And Star, you've been painting something out here. This looks like, is this Santa Cruz from your perspective?
No.
San Francisco?
More San Francisco.
Are you a San Francisco woman?
I'm a Marin County woman.
What are you doing down here then?
Going to school.
And working at one of these, we won't say which shop.
Yes.
Right. So, and you, this took you 2 hours to paint. You're out here in a stand, which is illegally placed within 14 feet of a phone booth. But I'm not going to get into that right now. It looks good. I mean, it looks... Actually, it looks like a sort of a young painting, a young person's painting. Did you have any training for this?
I've had some training.
Are you regularly paint, or...?
Yes, I do.
Is your work available, like, to look at in any particular place, or...?
Yes, there is some inside the store. I've done a lot of collaborations with customers, actually.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Are you also... Collaboration means you're a teacher, or you simply kind of work together with the person?
We just work together. I set up a painting, and I have customers come and help me draw in different details and things like that.
You're really in the rare position where a business is paying you to be an artist.
Yeah, I'm pretty lucky.
How long have you been doing this?
A couple months. I've been working here for almost 2 years, but I've been doing this for a couple months.
And they just, they saw your artwork and they liked what you did, or?
They know that I'm an artist and that I can do this and interact with people, so they asked me to do that.
One way to make a little profit off of one of their employees, perhaps?
Maybe. I mean, it brings in the customers.
Well, there you are. Anything you've seen today on the streets that's attracted your interest or notice you want to mention?
Gotta love the music group over there.
A nice sound, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking with...
What?
Your name again.
Oh, Star.
Thanks, Star.
And it's probably a good place to begin the audio account of Tuesday's City Council meeting. Unfortunately, it's not going to be the substance of the City Council meeting, or maybe not. I mean, maybe it's not unfortunate because I guess the actual incident of the arrest adopted a lot higher notice than the subject matter that they were supposed to be and in fact did discuss, in which actually I asked for time to speak about on behalf of the organization I work with, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. It was the public assembly law, or one of the two laws that the City Council passed, which essentially are now restricting public assembly vis-a-vis the prior law, the disclaimers of Scott Collins and Kathy Agnon notwithstanding. Those are the two who seem to be either presenting or creating this bill. And I talked about the bill somewhat, this was actually not a discussion of the new proposed law. It was a study session to kind of get input around a particular aspect of that proposal having to do with a lottery that will grandfather in certain large events and prohibit others, or at least limit them, through a lottery service. And I wanted to talk about that. And perhaps I will today. I do have my notes that I wasn't able to read at the City Council meeting. I did contact Mayor Robinson in advance and asked her, I advised her that as an organization I would be spending 5 minutes speaking. I like to put it that way because I don't like to give her the illusion that she has the option to sort of pick and choose among the organizations. I don't think that she does. Or if she thinks she does, I don't think it's a good idea to encourage that kind of behavior. I think any organization that wants 5 minutes should have 5 minutes to talk. And I asked for it, and she quite properly granted it. Ironically, of course, I was forced to leave the council meeting and arrested rather than having the opportunity to give my brief discussion of the issue. The reason I was arrested had nothing to do with the issue, and it had nothing to do really with anything other than the mayor's enforcement of a city council rule that has been on the books for a decade and a half, but never enforced for the simple reason that it's a completely unreasonable rule. And it's also been one that was created specifically to deal with, well, candidly, me and other homeless activists about 15 years ago, because Mayor Fitzmaurice became angry at us for a variety of reasons and responded to this in a variety of manners, the main one of which was to create a whole series of restrictive decorum rules. And this was one of the decorum rules, and that was that you shall not leave an unattended recorder either at the podium or anywhere in the city council chambers. In other words, you either have to stand by your recorder at all times, which, of course, for a person with a rather low-quality recorder, which is what I have, destroys the value of the tape, or can if you're speaking to someone else whispering or somebody else is rustling and you're relatively far away from the speakers. And also, it doesn't let you leave the building to, you know, go to the bathroom, talk to somebody else outside. It's very unreasonable. And I actually wrote Mayor Robinson about this some months ago when I was advised she was going to enforce this rule. And she apparently decided not to, because I made it clear to her that I felt it was sufficiently unreasonable, that I felt it was a violation of both the State Brown Act, which is the law that requires the city council and other legislative bodies to allow members of the public and members of the media, particularly, to make audio recordings or video recordings if they don't disrupt the meeting. And my audio recording has never, ever disrupted the city council meeting. I just put it up there, and I make it all at point, and I told Lynn I would do this, Lynn Robinson, the mayor, that I would do this at times when there was nobody else up there so I wouldn't be interfering with any of the speakers. Well, to give the full background to this, I also wrote her recently that while I appreciated the fact that she was not attempting to remove the tape recorder in spite of her threats to do so through the city clerk, Bren Lair, who spoke to me, that we're going to remove that recorder. And I said, well, I hope you don't, because I think it'll be inappropriate, and I don't think that it would be something that I think I would have to seriously disagree with. And, you know, do whatever I needed to do to continue to record the meeting, without disrupting it, of course. And so they didn't do it. And so I wrote Lynn back and said, thank you very much. I appreciate you doing this. I think you should announce to the community that you are not enforcing this particular rule in case other people are afraid that they are going to have their recording devices taken in the event that they show up. And this was actually probably highly unlikely, but it was also my attempt to make sure that I would not be further harassed by this in the event that Lynn had a bad night or Take Back Santa Cruz, went on a binge or something. Groups that didn't want to hear me decided they wanted to try to enforce some rule that would restrict what I'm doing and, again, putting it out over the radio. So I sent her an email suggesting that she make a public statement that during the remainder of her city council term, she would, as mayor or as council member, she would both not make any attempt to interfere with a media or private person's attempt to record there unless there was a disruption, and also that she would resist other people's attempts to do so. Her response was at this meeting to immediately have an officer remove my tape recorder. I didn't, as I say, make this request to her in any verbal way. I put it in an email, and I put it in an email several days in advance, and I suspect it prompted her to take exactly the wrong action. Too bad. I don't think it's a good idea. Some would say, oh, you want to go to court. Oh, you want to prompt a response. No, I want to. Yes, I do. I want to prompt a response. I don't want to prompt a court action. I don't want to prompt a bad action on her part. I want her to essentially come clean with the community and say, look, this is something I'm not going to do, and I hope you, you all be advised of it so you don't have to be afraid when you come into the room about this or curious about what's going on. Nobody actually, as I understand, ever complained about my tape recorder, and nobody complained on this occasion. Robinson just decided to do so arbitrarily on her own initiative. She instructed the police officers to remove it. I'm going to now play that the tape. And it's a little hard to hear because I had to keep my voice very low. I wanted to be very careful not to disrupt the meeting because I knew, and I turned out to be correct, that that's exactly what they would accuse me of, even though I was doing no such thing. So this begins in the middle of Scott Collins, who's the assistant to the assistant city manager, his presentation about the public assembly bill. It's a little hard to understand because I've skipped through the first few minutes of it, and there's no point in playing all of it. You'll eventually find it, I hope, online, unedited. I tried to find it there today, but it sometimes takes more than 2 days for the techies to get the video of the city council up. Now, before we go any further, some people are going to ask, well, why didn't you just, do the video at home and get the audio off the machine if you have that kind of technology? And sometimes I do. And my answer is kind of threefold. First, that technology comes late. It's not in time for this show. And as it was exemplified by today, there was nothing available. It is true the city council put out a disc. And in record time, I've never seen them do this. It usually takes them a week, a DVD disc of the city council meeting. But they usually take about a week to get a disc out and 3 or 4 days to put it up on the Internet. So the second reason is that I want every member of the community, even those who don't have computers, perhaps people who are homeless or good access to computers, to be able to walk in with a cheap recording device and do the recording they need to do without being especially burdened. That's the second reason. And then the third reason is a little more subtle, but I think it's equally important. And that reason is, I think it is important for the city council to know it is being videoed or it is being audioed. I think it essentially, just like when you do this with a police officer who's on the street, puts them on better behavior. And those are the three reasons I would say to people who say, well, why don't you just get it off the air? You're causing all kinds of trouble here. Actually, I was doing nothing other than what I've always done, quietly, customarily, unusually, boringly, because most of what they say is boring, and most of what the public says is ignored. But, of course, they reacted in a repressive way. And here is what happened according to this tiny tape recorder.
So here we are, it's April.
So we'll go over background of the public major special events, what they are, how many we carry out throughout the year, and then discuss the draft administrative policies before you, which largely incorporate current practices that Kathy and her predecessors have put in place, but also incorporate new proposals that we've learned through, learned over time that might help improve the balance, and we've learned a lot of that through stakeholder events and outreach to the community to learn what we can do better. And then we'll close on a discussion about city sponsorship of the external events. Oh yeah, before we jump into it, Kathy's just going to give a brief overview of our website so people can learn about how to find what events are scheduled.
At this point, I think Sergeant Bush is picking up the recorder.
Can you just speak generally about this?
What are you doing, taking my tape recorder?
Returning it back to you, pursuant to the mayor's request.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the best place to put it. I feel you'd be interfering with the media if I didn't put it there. No offense to you.
I requested that to give it back to you.
I understand. If I put it back there, I understand it's not personal.
Just doing my job.
Yeah.
There are other speakers you can hold it up next to.
No, that would require me doing so the entire meeting. It's not a reasonable response.
And this point, or shortly thereafter, I put the tape recorder back up on the dais after Sergeant Bush had courteously returned it to me.
And what I'm going to do is actually all upcoming.
Excuse me, Kathy. Pardon me. I'm sorry to interrupt you. But, Mr. Norris, I'd like you to take the tape recorder, if you don't mind, as the rules for the decorum in the council chamber. You can't leave a recorder unattended, so I'm giving you this opportunity to remove the recorder at this time.
May I speak?
No, but you can come and remove your recorder. There'll be a time to speak to the item tonight. So this is a disruption of the meeting, so I am giving you the opportunity to remove the recorder as the decorum and rules.
I just want to record, not disrupt, but that's where it's best to record. It can't be in another part of the room. Sorry.
Yeah, I do know that it's already been given to you one time already, so I'm giving you the opportunity to keep the recorder. Keep it in your possession as anyone else can do to keep the recording going.
I believe at this point it was returned to me again by Sergeant Bush.
I'm not sure.
So when you look at this calendar, you can just click on all upcoming. And what I wanted you to see, as far as community members, is this.
And Sergeant Bush wanted to know if I was going to do it again. I believe, although I don't recall the exact conversation there. And I told him I didn't know. I'd have to consider what needed to be done.
A list of all the upcoming special events. And
I think at this point I determined that Brent Adams was in the room with a video, where he was doing some videoing of the city council in a completely unrelated situation. And I asked Brent if he'd be willing to video subsequent events. He agreed.
Now only a father. So this takes us all the way through December 2014.
And about this point, I think I returned the tape recorder for the second time to the podium, or actually for the third time, if you count the first time when I did it.
This is, in some ways, a really, I think, a very helpful thing for community members to see. You can click on...
And as you can hear, the meeting is proceeding without any kind of disruption or interruption from the fact that my tape recorder is sitting on the podium.
And then it opens up to how to contact a promoter. So it's an effective way that I think our community can look and see what is scheduled. And I thought that would be helpful for folks to see visits at our stakeholders meeting. And again, you can just see the numerous events that we do.
So, this is a public major special event. It's defined in Santa Cruz Municipal Code 1064. And in essence, a public major special event is how it sounds. It's an event.
It sounds like the tape recorder is being taken for a third time by Sergeant Bush.
Significant in size, duration, and in impact to the community and/or city resources.
and typically take the form of a street closure, though not exclusively. But in essence, they create a large impact to the civilian transport. And of this, we have 85 events annually, 12 of which are water events at Steamer Lane, 8 of which are major races along our coastline, and then we also host probably closer to 20 large events downtown.
Mr. Collins, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but the meeting's been interrupted. Mr. Norris, this is the second time I've asked you, and you have been warned and known about the council policy.
This is, of course, Mayor Robinson.
And the rules for prohibiting you from leaving a collective bus unattended. When you are...
And I believe at this point, I think Sergeant Bush turned off the machine, or I accidentally turned it off.
I'm sitting down.
And I announce I'm sitting down, because I've been previously, it's my want to stand up along the side of the wall at City Council to review agendas, talk to people coming in, because I'm restless and often bored with much of what the City Council is doing.
I have asked you to leave the chambers due to the second disruption of this meeting.
And Mayor Robinson, either the first time or a previous time, that will be seen by looking at the, presumably by looking at the official tape when it is available online, or when I'm able to pick it up from the city staff. I've had a copy of it made. It was the first or second warning that I should leave the room, abandon my right to speak at City Council, to view the City Council, because I, as a member of the media, or just simply as a private individual, was doing what I've always done in an inoffensive, not particularly sort of nondescript way, putting my tape recorder where it's always been.
Not unless I'm under arrest.
And I was being asked by Sergeant Bush if I would leave the building. And I said no, and not unless I'm under arrest, meaning I will go if I'm under arrest, because that will be the only, I'm not going to resist an arrest. But I, you know, I feel I have a right to remain in the building. That was, and remain at a public meeting. It kind of upsets me to even talk about it, but let's hear some more.
That's her choice. Refusing to leave the chambers. I wish to continue being here because I'm a member of the public, and the Brown Act guarantees my right to be here.
That's correct. To leave the chambers, Mr. Morris.
I wish to continue to hear what's going on.
To vacate the chambers. If you refuse to leave, you will be subject to arrest. Would you please vacate the chambers?
I believe it's my right to hear the meeting, and so I'm going to continue to listen to it.
If you refuse to leave, I'll ask her one more time. If she wants you arrested, you will be arrested for disturbing a meeting.
I understand. I appreciate your situation. I'm sorry you're put in this position.
And there was an interval here where the mayor came down from the podium and filled out a citizen's arrest form.
And Mayor Robinson is conferring with the officer. And she is speaking to Deputy Chief Martinez. Perhaps prompted by my email to her suggesting that it's important that there not be a tape recorder at the area near the podium because it's against the rules.
What I mean by that nervously muddled statement is that there not be a confusion that there is some rule against it when in fact it is a First Amendment right for a member of the community to put their machine in a place where it can make a recording of the proceedings. It should be said that when this rule was made, and there's a whole, at some point I may bring back some of the debate about, if I think I have it on tape even, it's although it's 14 years old somewhere, about why this rule was made and who made it and how it was essentially ignored. As I understand it, and activist Becky Johnson has been following this. She tells me that I made a deal with then-Mayor Fitzmaurice that I would be very respectful of people being at the podium, and I will not change a tape while anybody's up there. I will not place it or take it away when anybody's up there, that I will be, you know, cautious about that. I thought that was actually, frankly, unnecessary, because I don't think it really disturbs people to have somebody near the podium with a, you know, dealing with that kind of thing. People understand there's a media that wants to know what's happening. But there was an understanding I had, and I tried to make the same understanding with Lynn Robinson, that she was concerned that somebody was going to be interfered with. I'd be particularly sensitive to that if that was her concern. She never made her concerns clear. She simply announced she was dusting off this ancient repressive rule and was going to begin to enforce it. And I don't think I was prepared to go along with that. It certainly wasn't on Tuesday. And here's some more of this, what ensued.
I'm sitting in the fifth row, and we're waiting. And she stopped her own meeting for this purpose. And we have about, 20 people in the audience, a very sparsely attended special session. And it's about 7:15 by the wall clock. The meeting has not been recessed, so we're waiting while she chats with looks like Tina Scholl and others.
Folks in the chambers, I'm sorry for this long disruption. The Sergeant of Arms did go and contact Mr. Norris, and I have asked for him to voluntarily leave the chambers due to the second disruption. So with this continued disruption, Sergeant of Arms had discussed with Mr. Norris the request and his refusal to leave the chambers, and in fact he had asked the Sergeant of Arms at this point that he would like to be arrested.
And, of course, I paused the tape here because that clearly is not what I said. I said, I'm not going to leave unless I am arrested, because in essence, because I have a right to be here. But I certainly didn't ask to be arrested. That would be a height of foolishness.
It's not a choice that I would like. I would like to see him voluntarily.
That's not true.
So I'm offering that opportunity once again, because I think that would be helpful in this situation if he would be voluntarily leaving the chambers. It's unfortunate because of the recording device. I'm sure you're able to record this, which is the point of being able to record it from throughout the chambers and not being represented.
Lynn recites the inaccurate, and one might say even false, statement that anywhere is fine to record in anywhere in the city council chambers rather than in the place where the tape recorder was, which is not what I found, and I don't think is true, but it certainly makes what she does more palatable to the general public.
Will you keep on putting your recorder up there and sit here peacefully and quietly?
So with this continued disruption, if you are not leaving the chambers, then I would be requesting that you would be arrested, and that's also what your request is as well.
What would be the charge?
That disrupting the meeting.
I'm sorry.
You can keep putting the recorder up there.
That was one of the few times when I made an audible statement in the room, because the mayor, in essence, was addressing me, and I felt I wanted to know what the charge would be. And then Sergeant Bush whispered, disrupting a meeting. In the future, if this happens again, I will whisper to Sergeant Bush, can you ask the mayor what the charge will be? Maybe you can go hustle up there, find out, and we can whisper to each other back and forth while the mayor speaks in a loud voice, eliminating a small tape recorder from the podium or from near the podium where it generally sits for the last 14 years.
I don't know what I'm going to do next, but I'm certainly going to be attending the meeting.
I have the right to be here.
Well, I'm trying to find a peaceful
of course, situation. I understand. So you're in a difficult situation.
So maybe if you tell me you won't put your record up there, we can continue on.
If there's a way to plug this machine into the system so it can actually record, which there isn't, there used to be, I could do that. But it simply cannot get the voices of the people up there clearly, but unless it's there, and that's my responsibility as a media person.
Okay.
I apologize for putting you in this position.
Okay. But I would hate to take you to jail.
Me too. I'm not interested in...
So if I can convince her that you will sit here and I'll put your record up there.
I suppose.
We have a meeting we're trying to run, and if Mr. Norris would voluntarily leave the chambers now, I think that that would be optimal. So offering that as a.
I would offer to the mayor if she has some other way of recording in an audible way. I could do that, but otherwise I'm in a situation where I have, you know, a responsibility to the community that I serve as a radio person.
And I'd like to add, I have a responsibility not to be intimidated by the selective and, I think, punitive use of rules to go after media, which I suspect Mayor Robinson is not particularly fond of. So that is true. That probably is an additional motivation for me here, I admit.
Two options. I can talk to her and tell her you can, won't put your recorder up there. Hope that'll work. And you'll sit here peacefully. Or if you don't, then she'll probably have you arrested for...
And that's Sergeant Bush trying to mediate to his credit.
I understand. You can also suggest if she has some third alternative, I'm happy to do that. If she could play somewhere else. As to whether you want me to be taken into custody into jail, that's up to you. But, you know, once you ask me to leave the meeting, I don't think I'll be coming back. So you have the option to cite me if you wish.
Can we go back outside and talk for a minute? So if you're on the meeting.
Frankly, I don't want to see this mayor intimidating members of the public in this way, and therefore, if she wants to do this, and I apologize for you having to be a part of this, I want it to be quite visible what she's doing. So if she's going to make the arrest, let her make the arrest.
Okay.
I don't want to be arrested. I just want to sit here and listen.
Are you going to return your microphone to the podium?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, since I don't have that guarantee, then she's going to ask that you vacate.
I understand.
Are you going to leave voluntarily, or are you going to?
I'm going to maintain my right to be in a public meeting under the Brown Act. I'm sorry, no offense meant to you.
Hey, Rick Norris.
Sir.
He's alive, and the mayor's direction is clear. He's to be arrested.
This is Deputy Chief Martinez coming over to essentially amplify what Sergeant Bush has said and what Mayor Robinson has said, which is that I will be arrested unless I leave.
I understand that you're explaining your arrest.
There were about four or five members of the audience who began to clap as I got up and was told I was under arrest and left.
So, as I was mentioning, we host 85 of the major special events, as I defined earlier, and 12 of these are water events in the lane. 8 are major races along the coast line. We have
maybe
a special
event.
Mr. Norris.
Yes.
If you refuse to leave now, you're going to be arrested for disturbing a meeting.
It's not going to go anywhere in court.
I'm not disturbing a meeting.
I understand your point of view, but if you refuse to leave now, you will be arrested. Would you please remove yourself from the chambers?
I understand your request, and I intend to stay here, but if you wish to arrest me, I'll certainly go with you if you're pending under arrest. I want to see the citation that
you're refusing to leave.
I am intending to stay, as is my right.
I think that's refusal to leave. You will be booked into jail.
That's up to you.
Okay, so you are hereby under arrest.
Okay.
And this is actually the point where I got up and was told I was under arrest and left. And I think it's important that people, if they can avoid it, not be intimidated by threats or coaxings or blandishments from the police to abandon their rights. That if they want to contravene constitutional rights and the legal rights of people to be in meetings because of the desires of those in power, that it be made clear to the community what's been going on. And that really is, I think, to some extent, what was going on here with me, too. The rest of this audio takes place outside, and I guess we'll hear that now.
Special events of the major bring a whole host of positive benefits. We have hotel stays.
How you doing?
Thanks.
And President Bush, I believe.
Sorry about that. Hey, well, so, Robert, talk to me here. Do I need a ticket to Jill, or can I give you a ticket?
You can give me a ticket. I'm not going to come in a second time without a lot more backup. We're recording this, as you know.
Understandable.
Yeah.
I understand you have a point of view, and I have a job.
Uh-huh.
So, let me just get my ticket booked back from my deputy chief. I'll give you a ticket and coordinate and send you on your way, all right?
Sounds good.
All right. Do you plan on coming back? Between you and me, are you going to come back in? Because I don't want to have to book you.
No, I have no plans. In the event that I do, I'll understand perfectly that you booked me, but right now, that's not my intention.
Okay.
I mean, I've got to talk to a few other people, but I don't think that's
my brother. I could take you now with the likelihood thinking that you're going to come back in.
Right.
But if you tell me you're not going to come back in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do I get to sign this?
Yes, definitely.
Let me put this down here. Excuse me. Robert? Yes.
We understand that I can't book you, but you're going to tell me you're not going to come.
At the moment, I have no intention of returning to the city council at this time.
Is this a new ordinance?
No, it's the decorum rules. It isn't even an ordinance. They're suggesting I disrupted the meeting, which, of course, is preposterous.
I've been recorded up there for 3 years.
Yes.
Why today is it different?
I sent Lynn Robinson email suggesting that she had allowed my tape recorder to be there, but she was also insisting that the decorum rules said that I couldn't have it there, that she changed the rules so that other people not have any confusion about that. I think that may have prompted her to decide it's time to crack down and enforce a policy that is really kind of ridiculous. I mean, while it's true that most people can get this recording off the air, people who are poor and homeless sometimes have to use other mechanisms, and also they do not put this stuff on the air in a timely manner so that they can meet my radio show, which I do.
What are you being charged with?
Officer?
403, disrupting a public meeting.
403, penal code, punishable by up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. It's disrupting a public meeting.
A misdemeanor charge?
It is a misdemeanor charge.
And you're signing it?
Of course. I don't wish to interfere with justice here.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
Certainly. It's Norris, actually.
What's the officer's name?
John Bush.
This is John Bush. He is a sergeant downtown and a sergeant at arms at this particular meeting.
Are you going to go back into the meeting without your recorder?
I don't know.
And the person asking the questions is Brent Adams, who is videoing this and has been presumably videoing the entire event after Sergeant Bush took the tape recorder off the place where it was doing its recording job and gave it to me, stopping the recording, effectively, at the order of Mayor Lynn Robinson.
I've told Sergeant Bush I have no intention of doing so. This isn't really the meeting that I would want to go to, although I think that this is a relevant discussion to the kind of...
Is Robert Norris Kahn?
I use the name Robert Norris. You can also know me as Robert Norris Kahn, whichever you
prefer. How would you like it? Robert...
Norris, N-O-R-S-E, is what I usually
do. Is your last name?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Norris, what address would you like to know?
309 Cedar, PMB 14B, Santa Cruz 95060.
I'm sorry, was there 309 Cedar Street what?
The usual process that we go through if an officer is writing a citation.
309 Cedar?
309 Cedar, PMB, number 14B.
Number 14B?
Uh-huh. And that's zip code is 95060.
You know your driver's license or ID number, sir?
I don't, but I can find it for you if you'd like.
If you got it handy.
I think your work as a video journalist is very important.
All right, Mr. Thank you for the call.
Now, are you arresting me on your own initiative or because of a citizen's arrest from Mayor Lynn Robinson?
Citizen's arrest from the mayor.
Okay.
She
has not yet signed the citation.
Right there, sir.
She will. Yes, indeed. There she is.
Yes.
My mistake.
Okay.
Yes.
Shot of that?
Sure. Her signature is right here. I would like to make a...
Before we go into this, The significance is here that the officers and his superior, Deputy Chief Martinez, both observed my behavior, which was setting up a tape recorder, standing by the side of the room, looking at the agenda, I don't know, chatting with Deputy Chief Martinez and Bush before the meeting, having a few other words with a few other people. Perhaps a whispered conversation during the meeting, I don't know. But none of that was disruptive. And I asked them, in essence, and you're going to hear me just saying this, whether they regarded any of my conduct as being the basis for disrupting a public meeting. If they had, they would have been responsible for making an arrest, because they are the officers of the law. They are responsible for carrying it out when they see violations of the law. They saw no such thing. But when Mayor Robinson decided that she wanted to characterize what I was doing as a disruption of the meeting, they acted like loyal soldiers. And I can understand, you know, that that's their job, but that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it fair, and that doesn't make it legal either. So what's important here is that there was no disruption that any ordinary person could be aware of. It was Mayor Robinson who stopped her meeting and created the disruption. And you can tell this by the fact that she signed the citation. She is the individual who will be called to court to testify on this issue, if it does go to court, and it isn't yet necessarily going to. I have a court date for May 6th, an arraignment date, and we'll see if they actually, if it actually appears. In the previous case where I was cited with disrupting a public meeting involving the mock Nazi salute, the "Don't Act Like a Bunch of Fascists" salute made 12 years ago, silent salute, the district attorney at that time, and it was a different district attorney, thought so little of it that he declined to file any charges, and it just went nowhere. We simply then sued, and the case went through the court for 12 years until a jury essentially dismissed the case, and that dismissal is now on appeal, and we'll find out what the result of that is at the end of that road. But we don't even know if this case is going to go to court. But it is a convenient way for a mayor to intimidate members of the public. By the brand and the inconvenience of an arrest, which may lead actually to being held in jail, but certainly involves the inconvenience of having to go to court. And if you've ever been arrested, you then are in a position where, if you wish to answer that question fully, you have to say yes.
Citizen's arrest, myself.
Okay.
I would like to make a citizen's arrest of Mayor Lynn Robinson, and the charge is filing a false police report. That is to say, she's claiming that a meeting has been disrupted. There is no objective evidence. You yourself were present that the meeting was disrupted. Her claim that it was disrupted based on a violation of the rules does not constitute a disruption. You are following her orders. I appreciate that. But I would like to file a counter citation, because I am also a citizen, though she may be the mayor and I may be a lowly individual. Still, I would like to make that file a citizen's arrest under the code section involving a false police report.
Okay. Well, I will note that in my report that you want to put.
Are you refusing to take that arrest? Because that's what I want to do right now.
I'm not going to arrest her for filing a false police report.
You will not take the citation from me, the citizen's complaint?
No, sir.
Even though you were present and you did not note any disruption yourself, correct?
That's up to a judge and a jury to decide,
right,
Robert.
But you didn't move yourself as an officer to say, okay, this is a disruption, I've got to stop this.
Robert, you can sign the red box. I will note in my report that you believe she filed a false police report.
That's not what I want. I'm asking you to take a citation as a citizen, do an equal citizen's arrest here, because I've been banned from a public meeting here because she has decided I've disrupted a meeting when there is no evidence whatsoever that this is the case.
Okay.
You're refusing to do that. Is that correct? You will not file such a report?
No, but I will.
You'll file a report, but you won't take
a
citation.
I'll file a report, but I'm not going to make an arrest for filing a false report.
Will you issue a citation so that she has to appear in court?
No.
And can you tell me why not?
Because I don't believe that grounds have been met for filing a false police report.
You believe there was evidence of an actual disruption?
I believe there was. The meeting was disrupted.
Who disrupted the meeting? Who stopped the meeting?
Based on your actions, Robert. So
did I?
Would you like to sign the red box?
Would I like to? No way.
I know.
All right, so you've clarified you won't do this. I will be happy to sign this.
Thank you, sir.
However, I would like to talk to your superior about this before we do, because I want to ask him to do that, too, before we go any further. Can you please do that? Ask him to come out.
You'd like, as in Deputy Chief Rick Martinez?
If he's here and if he's available to do that.
Let me see if...
Thank you. Still around?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to... I just want to document what's going on here. I think this is in unequal enforcement of the law. I think it's inappropriate, and I think you're, you know, understand your position, but still.
I'm trying to treat you with respect and do my job.
And I too. I'm trying to treat the community with respect.
Yeah.
If people can be arbitrarily eliminated from these meetings when the mayor decides a rule has been violated, that is not a good idea.
Chief Martinez, he would like the mayor arrested for filing a false police report. I advise Mr. Norris that's not going to happen. And he just wanted to speak with you for 1 minute before he goes on his way and signs the citation.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, Deputy Chief Martinez?
Correct.
I, as a citizen, wish to make a citizen's arrest, which means I simply want a citation issued as Mayor Robinson just did to me. I believe in claiming that I have disrupted a meeting. She has disrupted her own meeting. She has decided that because of a tape recorder sitting on the podium area, which where it sat for the last 15 years, that constitutes a disruption. Neither of you were in the, you know, felt this was adequate to take action on your own. You didn't think it was a disruption, or you would have may take some action as an officer to deal with it.
It's not our meeting.
No,
it's not our meeting. You've been around long enough to know it's not our meeting, nor is it our decision. So, if you could sign the citations, we don't have to escalate this any further than it already has.
Now, Martinez is talking quickly. That's Deputy Chief Martinez. But he's mistaken. It doesn't matter if it's their meeting or somebody else's meeting. If someone is disrupting a public meeting and a police officer observes it, it doesn't have to be their meeting for them to take action, to file a complaint, file a charge, make an arrest, or at least warn the person that they're disrupting the meeting. None of this happened.
Say that one more time, I'm sorry.
You could sign the citation so this does not escalate any further than it already has.
Again, notice the undertone of threat, so this does not escalate. In other words, we're too busy, we have to keep going, as though, you know, they have an emergency to rush off to. And, in fact, they're hanging around the meeting in case there's any kind of testimony requested in the public assembly bill. And it's a frequent tactic of the police to try to hurry you along. And it can work if you're under some pressure. And I was under some pressure. But let's hear some more.
I certainly don't particularly want it to escalate. I just want to know, again, from you as a higher official, you are telling me you refuse to issue my own request for a citizen's arrest. And I, you know, if it's a false citation, I could be charged for it myself.
Well, obviously, list your complaint within the report. I'm sure Officer Bush has explained that to you, and it'll be taken into consideration.
Well,
but at this time, the elements aren't present, and he doesn't believe they are either.
You don't believe that, you believe the meeting was disrupted. That's your belief.
I believe the elements of your complaint aren't present, so we will include the allegation in the report, but we're not going to arrest on it based upon that.
What the Deputy Chief Martinez is saying is that the elements of a complaint for a false report are not present, i.e., a mayor said the meeting has been disrupted because I stopped it in order to make sure that Mr. Norris didn't put the tape recorder back up on the podium. That stoppage of the meeting was somehow my decision rather than hers. Actually, what happened was I was violating a rule that she had decided to enforce unenforced for 14 years, which had no bearing on what was going on in the meeting whatsoever. And that decision on her part stopped the meeting. These two police officers are claiming that the elements of I'm not claiming she disrupted her meeting. She can stop her meeting anytime she wants. That's not a disruption for her. But for her to claim I disrupted the meeting when she did is a false police report. She's claiming that some action I took caused the meeting to be stopped. And this certainly defies common sense and common observation as to what happened. If that were the case, if putting a tape recorder on the podium area, near the podium area, and recording disrupted a meeting, the meeting would have been disrupted every time I'd done that for the last 14 years. It simply isn't true. The real issue is disobeying a mayor's order. That is the real issue. And the real issue then becomes, is this mayor's order something that is required to maintain the council meeting without disruption? And the answer, I think, pretty clearly here is no. It makes no difference whether the tape recorder is there or not.
A false police report would only be issued if what? What would I have to do to show that was the case?
We're not gonna have the public comment and discussion here with you. So, sign the citation and we'll move on.
I've often not taken to jail in San Felicia.
Yeah, I don't take it, and I understand your threat, and it's not something I would want to do either. But I also don't think it's particularly appropriate for the higher ups to have one standard for myself and another standard for the mayor.
So, Mr. Norris.
Yes.
I would like to go record the meeting.
Why don't you go inside and record it?
I have to get back to the meeting as well.
Well, let's not disrupt the meeting, shall we?
No, can I get your signature, please?
Not a mission of guilt, just a promise.
Just a promise to appear. Anyway, I have left the city council chambers and am downtown.
And that's a whole different story. So that was the meeting that was, and it took 45 minutes to go through. My apologies if you fell asleep or bored, or it was too repetitive. But that is, in fact, all the audio tape I had. People have accused me, usually trolls who couldn't care less what the facts are. That is to say, people who weigh in on stories where I'm commenting or writing in order not to ask meaningful questions or contribute to the discussion or even express an opposing opinion, but simply to vilify, to divert, and to be abusive in order to diminish the and distract the whole force of what is being discussed. And that is that often happens in the areas where I write, which is on Santa Cruz Indie Media, and also almost invariably on the Sentinel website, where I did write a little bit about this issue, more of it on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, where you can find more of it. It's at IndieBay, IndieBay.org, IndieBay.org/SM, Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media. So if you want to read essentially a reiteration of what I've said in the last 45 minutes, you can go there. I'm going to take one of those famous musical breaks, and I will return. This is a really sweet bit of music I picked up on Pacific Avenue. I think it's called The Sound of Music, and it's done by an unusual instrument, which I can never remember the name of.
Thank you.
clip one from, I think it's called The Sound of Music. Man playing some large kind of wok-shaped instruments, two of them, two large woks, it looks like. But you don't cook with them, you make music with them. Kind of interesting. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. The main story on Santa Cruz Indie Media isn't about my arrest at City Council. It's actually a pretty ridiculous arrest. But rather, the arrest of 22 people up on campus. Actually, 20 yesterday and 2 today. And the story reads, 20 demonstrators in support of the UAW strike arrested at UC Santa Cruz. And there's an account there. Court date is set for May 6th, the same date as mine, interestingly enough. I guess we all appear, anybody arrested on Tuesday. Although, actually, demonstrators were arrested on Wednesday, interestingly enough. A little bit more music, and I'll be right back. That's more from that really nice, double walk instrument. And as I was saying before, if you want to read more about the 20 demonstrators in support of the UAW strike arrested yesterday and the two arrested today, there are three stories on Santa Cruz Indie Media, and there's also a story about my arrest by Steve Plaich, strangely enough. And actually, there's more stories. There's five stories about the UAW strike, and I guess today it ends. But let's hear something from people who are up there. Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs, was up there today, along with a number of Food Not Bombs activists, and I was able to reach him by phone. I got this interview earlier. I'm going to play it now. Again, if you have any thoughts, you want to call in, you can. 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-3772, area code 831. And you're welcome to call in. I'll talk at you, and you can talk at me.
April 3rd, 2014, I'm on the phone with Keith McHenry, who's actually up at UCSC talking to people at the strike on campus.
Well, I need people. That's what I would say. thank you, yeah.
We're hearing one side of the conversation as he talks to passersby. Keith,
are
you there, Keith?
He just walked up to the table to harass us, yeah.
Who just walked up to the table?
Oh, some professor up here who thinks that graduate students should not be paid to work, yeah.
What are the issues in the strike, Keith, as far as you know? I know you've been up there all day with Food Not Bombs.
Yeah, so basically what is going on is a number of things. First of all, this is like a nationwide crisis, but this is, this particular strike is just the University of California system. But the issue is that the teachers' assistants and people, the way that the state is saving money and being able to reduce taxes for the super rich is to make sure that graduate students do the work that professors normally would do, and they're not paying them. So then they end up with a double load of trying to actually complete their graduate work plus trying to, trying to make a living to pay their bills. And I was pointing out to the professor that there are reports in the last 12 months that at least 63,000 college students are homeless. And when I went to Wells Fargo Bank to talk to people there at the downtown in Santa Cruz, the guy I talked to had been homeless as a student at Cabrillo College, and he had to sleep in the library and stuff. And he did his whole career college showers, sleeping on couches and stuff in lobbies and stuff. And this is very common. So then eventually you got to be got the right to be a bank teller. And he's living now with his mom and dad.
We're talking about...
Don't pay him enough.
We're talking
anyway,
about...
that's kind of the broad thing. And they're also calling for, equal rights on campus, an end to discrimination, things like that, in other aspects of, both gender and so on. And supported by auto workers and AFSCME and, I think it's also a service employees union, so there's three unions involved, and that union that the graduate students are represented by the United Auto Workers.
We're talking with Keith McHenry, who's the co-founder of Food Not Bombs. We heard yesterday, Keith, that at the Huff meeting, and Huff does support the strike, as I understand it, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, that there was something, a matter of bathroom use, too. Is there some issue there?
I'm not totally sure of that part. That was not what the students had asked us to provide food or talked about. So they came to our weekly meeting on Tuesday at the Little Red Church and said that they were, they wanted us to provide food for 2 days strike, and that the Thursday was the most important day because they had donations for Wednesday. And so we've been out here all day doing this, and that's all what I just told you about the situation was all I know about it. But I could pass you on to one of the student organizers if you want to talk.
Well, I do want to hear that, but let me talk to you for a moment before you do.
Okay.
Where are you located in the Food Not Bombs serving table?
Okay, well, I'm behind the table at Bay Drive and Coolidge Drive at the entrance to the main gate. And there was 20 arrests yesterday, and one of our volunteers is currently being jacked up, and I'm not sure of his status, but... the trash. Just stick it down there with with the clean cups and stuff, and we'll figure out what to do with it. Great. So, and we need volunteers here with Food Not Bombs. We need help cooking it, enjoy the free meal, or just come down and play music and hang out and eat with us every Saturday and Sunday at the downtown post office.
At 4 o'clock.
At 4 o'clock. And we cook at noon on both Saturday and Sunday, and Zombie House is where we cook on Saturday. And then the old Resource Center for Nonviolence on Broadway, that ocean, not the current one, but the past one where people are living now.
You're talking
that's
about
where we took on Sunday.
You were talking about you're talking about 515 Broadway on Sundays and 807 Laurel on Saturdays, apparently.
Yeah, 807 Laurel, and what's the number Broadway?
515.
515 Broadway. Yeah, and we have the meetings on Tuesday at the Little Red Church in the nursery school room.
And that is...
That's so cool.
It's going to be...
And we're going to interrupt this because we do have a live caller with kind of a delayed report on the UCSC arrests. Is that right, caller?
Yeah, it's nothing that can't wait. I met two who were arrested. They were detained. They were kept for 8 hours in custody. They were each... The 20 were kept 8 hours. And they were released one by one, each one separately, and they have to go back in May. But one had four charges.
Yeah,
that's all I know.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, I appreciate the call-in, caller. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, there's more information actually online. The actual the lead story says that the administration strategically chose to escalate our peaceful, lawful picket. Riot police were imported from UC Berkeley prior to the demonstration. The Berkeley police are known for their willingness to physically assault both students and faculty at peaceful demonstrations. Wearing riot helmets and batons and resting their hands on their weapons, police use conflicting messages to create confusion about what demonstrators could do to avoid arrest. First, police blocked both entrances to the crosswalk. Then they said that we could be in the crosswalk only when the walk sign was on, and then proceeded to shut it off. Some officers then said that we couldn't picket on the sidewalk or grass near the west entrance, even after people had moved off of the street. The details of where people could be were not clear in any dispersal order. The mixed messaging were clearly part of a tactic to stop a legal peaceful picket. By instilling fear among demonstrators, they might be arrested at any time merely by being in the vicinity of the protest. The administration deprived UAW, that's United Auto Worker members, of our legal right to picket. Shortly after union members and undergraduate allies gathered at the western entrance, they were confronted by riot police. A union leader was specifically targeted after communicating to administrators that the picket was about to begin. He introduced himself to Executive Vice Chancellor Allison Galloway and informed her that he was going to be exercising his right to picket, that he would not be standing in front of cars or blocking traffic. Shortly after this encounter, he was tackled to the ground by police and arrested, along with a photographer who was documenting the incident. He had clearly stated he was not going to block any cars and he would be walking in the crosswalk. We have video footage of this arrest. You can watch clips of it here. And there's a... not sure where we can do that, but you can't see it, so you might want to find it but on Santa Cruz Indy Media. Riot police then proceeded to arrest 18 more students and union members. Students are now entangled in the legal system. As of 6 p.m., all of the arrested demonstrators have been released. Their court date is May 6th, 8:15 a.m. in Santa Cruz Superior Court. And there's additional stories, updates, interviews at UCSC Graduate Student Workers Strike, why we are striking, and then the preparations for the strike. So you can check out those stories on Santa Cruz Indy Media if you have a computer. If you don't, guess you're out of luck. Or maybe you can wait in line at the library, provided you aren't disabled and need to use the bathroom, because there seems to be a problem at the library with that kind of thing. So let's hear some more from Keith McHenry about what he's describing as... this happened about 3 or 4 this afternoon, at least that's when his account came over the phone. My apologies for the kind of crackly quality of the recording.
Cedar and that's at Cedar and Lincoln, I think.
Cedar and Lincoln.
Well, let me ask you though, how long you've been at the campus today?
We started up here at about 9 o'clock, but the reality was we could not get to the campus until 11:30. Because of the block, the way the police have blocked off all the roads around here, and that's been quite a challenge. And we had to start walking the food in, but we kept like convinced, you know, we have to talk our way in to, you know, convince police to let us through, and some would not, some would, things like that. And that's what our problem is now with Major Dave, who is our other vehicle. So he and I went out to get water, and he came back, and I told him, well, I'm just parking up there. So I went up there, pulled into a driveway, backed out, pulled into a parking space, no problem. But right after that, he did the same thing, and a bunch of cops came and busted him. So we don't know so we have a bunch of volunteers up there now, like talking to the police, trying to deal with that, and hopefully he will not be taken away.
So he's being held but not yet arrested? What's the situation?
Yeah, he is just certainly sitting on the sidewalk with a lot of cops asking questions.
And
running his plates and doing his tickets and stuff so far. Now, one of the officer that pulled him over originally just left and has come back. The unmarked car. They pulled their Santa Cruz police.
How many cops are there up there?
Well, right now there's only like 2 state police and like 4 or 5 University of California police. There have been riot police, major, you know, like probably 30, 40 riot police at one point.
But today or yesterday?
Today.
And what did they do? They just came up and made a show for us and left, or what was their
They arrested 2 people originally today, and they were in 20 yesterday. And so that, you know, that's the kind of thing that they're doing right now.
Now,
up until recently, then they withdrew. We just saw one of the UC Berkeley riot police just left about 20 minutes ago. They drove by. They were staged out of sight when we moved to the main gate. We were blocking both main gate and the west gate. And then we just moved all of our people to, everybody marched over here to the main gate. And so there was a lot of people already here, so we just united the groups of people.
How many protesters are there?
Oh, wow. There's probably been roughly 100, and, you know, maybe a little bit more than that. It's not a real, real big protest, but definitely enough to block the road, 2 entrances to the place.
And how successful has that been? How many people have turned? What's the percentage of people turned back who wanted to go through? Would you say?
You know, a lot of people. I wouldn't know the percentage, but the line was, like I say, several hours long, and so many. You know, they basically, those people did not get on campus for several hours. So I don't know what that means exactly, but that happened. A lot of people were, you know, there were people turning around as the lines stayed there. A lot of the lines, it turned out once you got to the blockade, a lot of it was the police blockading all you know, the area. It was kind of crazy.
So they were
really more disruptive than the actual blockade.
What have you been serving today to folks up there?
Well, it was really intense. That's been crazy. So we have a lot of artichokes. And we have a rice, we made a big pot of rice, we have a pot of beet stew, tossed salad, we have pastries, and we've been doing a huge stir fry on the stove, an outside stove, with a big giant wok that we have. So that's what it's been, and we've got some cheers for, like when we moved from the other side to here, we had a lot of cheers from the happy lunch eaters, so that was pretty exciting.
How many people would you say you've served today?
Well, we went through a lot of food. I don't know what the numbers are. We have 100 bowls. We might have gone through like 75 bowls, but we do wash them, so I'm not totally clear what the... But, you know, we've probably many of the people, for sure. And we've had, like, lines of people, you know, coming by, particularly once we brought the food out originally. It was very popular. It took us so many hours to get the food here. It was really crazy. We had graduate students that are part of the union help us cook, so that's been really cool. And I think we got a lot more volunteers as a result, I think. So that's been great.
Hmm.
I'm pretty psyched about that.
And let me ask, this is sort of not really a devil's advocate question, but maybe a two-day strike. You know, traditionally strikes are supposed to go on until the grievances are met. Why just a two-day strike? Or should I ask this of the representatives? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the weird thing is how I suspect that this is completely illegal against the Labor Relations Board, you know, because, in the United States, you know, strikes are... You know, essentially, you know, really tough. You have to do the cooling off period. You got to get permission basically from the federal government to go forward, things like that. It's pretty unusual to have, like, essentially a wildcat strike, which is, so even though it's only 2 days, it's pretty daring.
Sounds like a tangent.
Horrible that that's the way it is in America, but, yeah, anywhere else you would strike, like you say, for a year.
Well, I mean, it just sounds like a tamed cat strike. In a way, it sounds like sort of one of a token strike to raise an issue, because unless you have the threat of a continued strike, I mean, what's the point?
Well, they do have that threat. So basically what they... And this is common even in, like, you know, Europe and Latin America, too, where you do, like, a 1 or 2 day strike to show that you can actually disrupt the, whatever the organization is that you're striking against. And then... announce that you are prepared to do even more if they don't go back to the bargaining table, and then if they don't, you know, then you do a larger one. But it gives you, so that can be the case. And it certainly has disrupted this campus. I mean, when you were first interviewing me, there was a tenured professor that was really angry about the disruption and said it was giving University of California a bad name, and then he was trying to say... His logic was very interesting. He was saying because of the student protest in Berkeley, at UC Berkeley, that, at the time Reagan was governor of California, that was why the budgets for the University of California were cut. It was because of the student protesters, not because of neoliberal structural adjustment and, you know, the whole, you know, all the different things, whatever, Proposition 13, all the stuff that happened back then. And, you know, to say that student protests were why Reagan diverted all the fund, you know, huge massive amounts of federal tax dollars to military instead of, to social services and stuff. And all the horrible things that Reagan did when Reagan was president, you know, that's not because of some students at UC Berkeley protested.
Well, I think the Reagan thing was when he was governor of the state, and that was, you know, in the 60s. And, you know, Proposition 13 was in the late 70s. So get your facts straight, McHenry. That's all I can
say. Yeah, but I think a lot of the... I think ultimately the funding crisis in California comes from property tax crisis of all the... first it started out with just Reagan, but it being governor and cutting, you know, doing the bidding of transnational corporations at that time. But then it became Proposition 13, became the next crisis. Yeah, no, I'm definitely not seeing it happen at the same time. But they are part of the whole reason California is often struggling with its, ability to pay for things.
Let me ask you about a secondary thing that we're going to be talking about or already perhaps have talked about on free radio tonight. This, of course, is being recorded a couple hours beforehand, but you went to the Santa Cruz City Council meeting on Tuesday night. They had a special session regarding a public assembly law that makes it more difficult for large fledgling events to proceed and introduces a lottery system. It also has a number of other, I think, rather hidden aspects that I wanted to discuss but wasn't able to because I was arrested and removed from the chambers for my criminal tape recorder placement. Now you suggested. You were actually there after I had left. What happened at that meeting, and did you in fact stand up and demand justice for tape recording people?
Well, unfortunately, no one. People did actually mention that. I didn't talk because I'm waiting to. Relatively new here, and I just, so many people would get up and say, I've been here 14 years, I've been here 50 years, I've been blah, blah, blah. And so, and the overall, concept of what was being discussed, I didn't really know enough about, but there was some nice, by and large, the things that people did talk about, people did mention that the getting rid of you is like a part of a whole trend that goes on. With this city council, where free speech is not really supported, and alternative opinions are sort of squashed. So most of it was around trying to defend open streets because they're the ones that kind of mobilize people. And then there was two or three people who were angry that there were big events because they interfered with their ability to park. That they had walked to some elderly people that actually had some, they're probably legitimate grievances that they would never, the city doesn't want, and therefore they go out to the event themselves on a Saturday, and then the evening, and when they get back after the event, they have to walk six or seven blocks to their house, and suddenly it's off limits. A lot like what we're seeing here with the way the police are managing the streets. They're kind of pissing people off, basically, by shutting down the streets unnecessarily all over town in an aggressive way, rather than figuring out, maybe they give passes to residents. And so they're kind of pitting the alternative community and surfing community and stuff against the, senior citizens that have, where they're not providing people with access to their own homes.
I'm glad to hear, Keith, that Food Now Bombs is making an appearance. I'm not sure. You weren't there on behalf of Food Now Bombs. You were there because you and Abby were both interested in the issue, or what? Why did you?
Yeah, we were there. We were concerned because we had heard a bunch of different stories that public events would be limited, and so Abby spoke out against that. That there should not be. That the reason that the that this clamping down on like cultural events and making it more difficult for cultural events to exist and so on just did not seem rational, and that it would that it was part of this whole trend of limiting everything from street performers to it didn't have anything really directly to do with Food Not Bombs because it was not. We were, it was large events. We could have a large event, maybe be denied. But, maybe we'd have the 40th anniversary of Food Not Bombs Superstock here and not be able to do it because we didn't win the lottery. So there's potential problems with that. But fortunately for Food Not Bombs, we could do it in any city in the world. So if this city's a bunch of assholes, then we can just do some other city. But anyway, that being said, it's just... you know, worry into people having free expression and thinking of creative things like Open Street sounds, you know, as a fantastic event. That should not be limited. And in fact, it should be encouraged. There should be more of it, you know. There should be Open Streets, you know, maybe even once a month someplace in town. It's like a cool idea. Why is it only 4 or 5 hours? And why shouldn't it be, like, you know, all day and stuff like that? And any other random cool thing that somebody thinks of between now and the future. So that's what almost all the speakers against this ordinance proposed, you know, policy were saying, that, you know, or pointing out that something cool could happen that we had, no one had ever thought of, and then now you're locked into this bunch of rules, and therefore a cool thing might not happen. Is it just because of all this, you know, being so concerned about making laws and rules all the time?
What was the council's response?
They did not really have much response. They're going to send it back to staff overall. Staff is going to, you know, they didn't vote on it or anything. It was more of an informational thing. So they, you know, I don't really know what they're going to do about it.
I know Brent Adams, who videoed some of the arrests that happened to me at that meeting, was also interested because he's planning a camp out next month. He hopes with permits from the city council. Good luck to that. But he also, I think, was going to speak out about this ordinance because he felt that not only is he going to have to get a camping permit, but also a special events permit. Did he speak? And you know who Brent Adams is?
No, he did talk about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't really specifically say about his camping thing, but he was worried about the ability to get permits and you know, this could be limiting. And he was, you know, he's very super polite and everything like that. And kind of, you know, be nice to the politicians because otherwise he's going to be cut off. So, you know, that was cool, you know, what he was doing. But he didn't go into specifics about his events.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know he was trying to do that. But he was there, you know, he did speak out that he thought the limiting. I mean, he was saying the same thing. I mean, is there, you know, basically why have all these excessive rules? You know, where you only so many events per year and so many places and stuff like that, when they're not actually accommodating the actual concerns of the citizens that are upset about all these events. You know, there could be a lot of things the city did to guarantee the events would be cool, you know, and that the people that are upset about it would not be, you know, so upset because the city would retreat them under respect and let them know what was going on. It's essentially all the opponents wanted, you know, people upset about these major events. So
we're talking with Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs here in Santa Cruz. He's up on campus supporting the strike of the TAs. And I guess if you want to hand the, you know, the phone to some other activist who's actually wants to talk about the issues.
Can I have Daniel actually call you from his phone, because I'm starting to get a bunch of phone calls on my phone.
Sure, he can. Do you have my phone number? Do you want to give it to him?
Yeah, I'll give it to him, and then he'll call you back. Okay, man.
That sounds good.
Okay, take care, man. Thanks
right.
for interviewing.
Thank
bye
you.
Bye.
Thank you. And call with updates.
So that was a couple hours ago, Keith McHenry from the Food Not Bombs table up at UCSC strike against the failure to provide a living wage or raise salaries and cut classroom size adequately for TAs. There's an interesting discussion about it, strangely enough, on the Santa Cruz Sentinel website. Not, of course, in the article, but in the comments that follow, you get the folks denouncing the strike, and then you get the TAs and others supporting the strike going into some detail about what their salaries are, how much time they spend there. It's interesting. I haven't read them with enough care to be able to pass on information in a way that's helpful. But if people are interested, go check out the Sentinel website. I should warn you that the Sentinel now no longer allows people to backlog articles past a year. So used to be able to find articles up to, I don't know, 5 or 10 years. Now you can't. In fact, that kind of pissed me off today because I was trying to write some responses for my own stuff about the background to my arrest and where this crazy no unattended tape recorder came from. It's kind of like no unattended property on the sidewalk, or I don't know. It's a you know, a series of increasingly harsh restrictions that simply give a lot of options to people in power, whether it's the mayor or the police or the hosts, whoever they are, wherever, whatever area they're in, to enforce rules selectively against people. And or even unselectively, but in a way that oppresses everybody. And so it's bad. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. I'll be on here with you for another 25 minutes. Call-in number, in case you have some thoughts, is 831-427-3772. I have filed a Brown Act complaint against Mayor Robinson for excluding me from the meeting because I have the right to audio record under the Brown Act, the Public Meetings Act, and she in essence denied me that right. I think she responded to a Sentinel reporter who interviewed me and her yesterday saying, no, he could record, he just can't record unless he's standing next to his tape recorder or sitting next to his tape recorder, and unless his recorder is far away from the podium. But, of course, that means the recording I'm making, given this tape recorder, will be much more difficult to hear if it's audible at all. So in the studio with me is a commentator who wants to comment. Go ahead, commentator.
Yeah, I think you made a good case, Robert. There is no adequate alternative for you. I mean, holding it up to a speaker isn't going to work. And you've done it for years? How many? 20 years?
Since 1988.
Yeah, so they basically waived any complaint they can make about it. And this was just, taking away your First Amendment rights. You have a right to gather news as well as to speak. It's part of freedom of the press. The real issue is that you were going to speak about the shrinking sidewalks. So she used this...
Shrinking public assembly.
Yeah, she used this to divert you from being able to speak. It was going because she knew what your content was going to be. So it's not content neutral either. So it's going to be strictly, it goes under strict scrutiny, they say, for which requires a compelling government interest. And there's not even a rational government interest in her doing that. It's like you say, it's just the abuse of power.
And, of course, what she might respond would be, no, I had no objection to Mr. Norris speaking. In fact, later in the whole meeting, Mr. Norris had asked specifically for 5 minutes to speak on behalf of Huff, even though he asked only an hour before the meeting, which isn't giving me much time to make up my mind, as though she had the right to turn this down, but that's the way she likes to put it. And therefore, I was quite prepared to allow Mr. Norris to speak. I had told him so in an email before the meeting began. And, in fact, after he was excluded, I made it clear that any member of Huff who wanted to speak on this issue could have 5 minutes. I'm not interested, she might say, in suppressing any particular viewpoint, however much I might disagree with it.
Yeah, there's a presumption, though. Why did she pick this evening in order to drop the bomb on you on doing the recording? The burden of proof's on her.
Well, Mr. Norris sent me an email that said, you have a rule that says unattended tape recorders should not be... are not permitted and not permitted, up near the speaker's podium. And he pointed out to me that he wanted me to disregard this rule for the rest of my mayorship and the rest of my city council membership. The city council voted these decorum rules again, or actually for the first time, I think it was, about a month ago. And that was a part of that issue. And it was voted by a majority, unanimously, in fact.
A month ago?
Yeah, by the city council.
How long does it take for their stuff to become law?
It's not a law. It's a city council procedure, and it becomes in effect immediately. I mean, it's a city council internal policy. But the public had an opportunity to comment. Mr. Norris did comment for the 2 minutes I allowed him to comment. And, in fact, there were some changes made. I believe the provision against scandalous remarks was softened. So that you are now encouraged, I may have this wrong, not to make scandalous, profane, or indecorous comments, or those that bring the city council into contempt or disrepute.
Behavior does that.
Those are a part of the decorum rules, and there was the word "shall not" was changed at the suggestion of Mayor Lane, or as I say, former Mayor Lane, Councilmember Lane, to the words "should not." So, in other words, a person cannot be evicted now from the city council meeting for speaking harshly, even abusively, yeah, of city council members. And that was something we took into consideration. Mr. Norris made a comment about it. I don't know if I favored that particularly, but it passed the city council.
You're saying the should part applies to the tape recorder too?
No, I'm saying that that tape recorder issue was a part of the entire decorum rules, which were passed by the city council. Mm-hmm. We have a caller. Excuse me. As a mayor, I have to turn to my constituents. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Acting Mayor Robert Norris and Free
Gadfly.
Oh, hi. Well, this is an anonymous caller. I was listening a little bit, and it sounded like you were talking about somebody who got arrested at the city council meeting.
I was, yes.
That's Robert. They take you to jail, Robert?
No.
I listened last week. I wondered if you had a minute to talk about some local political issues, like the 3rd District County Supervisor race.
Oh, is this the one with Coonerty versus LaMonica?
Exactly. I heard you recommend voting for the latter.
ABC, anybody but Coonerty. That's sort of my motto.
Well, you have kind of an issue with Coonerty because you were banned from Bookshop Santa Cruz, right? I've been to Huff meetings.
It wasn't Ryan Coonerty who banned me. It was his father. So I don't really hold him responsible for banning me, although he did continue the ban. I am concerned that he banned other Huff members from the bookshop for essentially engaging in political activity in front of the bookshop, around the issue of the sleeping ban, when he was the mayor.
Uh-huh.
I think he was irresponsible in that regard and politically punitive. And
well,
he also
I'm fascinated by them, by the Coonerty family.
Right.
Ryan went to England. He went to the London School of Economics. He is a constitutional law professor.
I don't know what constitution he's really a constitutional law professor of. I know that's his title, and I know he teaches classes at UCSC and sometimes at Cabrillo, but I know that his behavior at city council has been quite the opposite, at least in terms of local issues.
Well, he did. The only thing that ever happened with me there is that I was standing in the back, and I started laughing.
Aha!
And he said, I think that we're a far better community than to laugh, And so I stopped laughing. And
what do you mean by laughing at a city council meeting, caller? I mean, that's disrespect for our city council.
Well, it is disrespect, but I know, the bookshop, I think it was Neil Coonerty who said it's like the living room of Santa Cruz, which is interesting. I mean,
He said the downtown is the living room, is what he said, I believe.
Oh, did he?
Bookshops
are dying out. The capital of book. I'm sorry.
Free said
it's a police state downtown nowadays. I mean, you can't sit down there. And Coonerty's responsible for a lot of that. Am I wrong?
What it makes me think of is history class, and the fact that many years ago they had those Pinkerton guards, so that if people would strike or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, not to go too far out on a limb, but I don't know if I should say this, but even if you look at things like Ludlow in Colorado,
Ludlow Massacre,
the coal miners went on strike and they were shot. And that was all by security forces.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Egypt, they've been shooting down protesters left and right. I mean, there are far more recent and modern examples. But, this whole business of LaMonica versus Coonerty, I'd like to pick it up on Sunday when I can actually give it some more time. I got 16 minutes left in this show, and I want to sort of finish up what we've been discussing, which has to do with my arrest.
Robert's in the media.
I was curious. Yeah. I'm fascinated by all that, by the local politics.
Yeah, well, call back, caller. I think we should really explore. I mean, I actually written up a lengthy itemization of what I consider Coonerty's civil liberties violations and initiatives to curtail civil liberties in Santa Cruz. And I think they are numerous, and they are, they are of long standing, and they show a pattern of mind and a pattern of thought. And if you agree with that, definitely you should vote for Coonerty, but I don't. And I would encourage people to vote ABC, anybody but Coonerty. In this case, Bob LaMonica, who, has his faults, but he's sure as hell better than Coonerty.
Well, he is not beholden to the progressive establishment. I'm not quite sure what that means.
That's true, too. LaMonica is an independent man. He's not even beholden to Huff.
He
has been denouncing us and everybody else. So he's a wild card, but frankly, a better a wild card than a, you know,
a fascist.
Than an, you know, a regimented anti-constitutional character who is masquerading as a constitutional lawyer, you know. I mean.
To see people in different communities and to see what their values are. All right, well, thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, definitely call back, caller. Thank you.
Okay, I'll see you later. All right, thanks.
All right, man. So, yeah, do call in if you'd like. And, you know, callers get first priority, even if it means it sort of pushes our topic aside. But I will try to move you along if you're talking about other stuff. But thank you, caller, for that call. Mm-hmm.
We get so few at Free Radio.
We do.
They,
and I, you know,
they
I was
have
listening,
priority.
I was listening to Free Radio, a tape from 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And the callers were, you know, every minute, every 5 minutes they were calling
us. The community has changed. It's not, I mean, it's expensive to live here, Robert.
Also,
the radicals had to move.
Technology has
That's
changed.
That's true.
I mean, a lot of people aren't listening to the radio
YouTube,
anymore that were, mm-hmm, and so, I mean, yeah, it's different. And, you know, people can communicate. They spend their time on Facebook. They spend their time
mm-hmm.
on, you know, with podcasts. They spend their time doing other things. And there's so much more available on the Internet than Free Radio Santa Cruz. So
mm-hmm.
I can appreciate that. But what I do try to do is, you know, get out some local stuff. I also want to announce that the Huff meeting, as we were talking about yesterday, Free, we are planning to do a kind of a research and a kind of a wake-up coffee down on the levee. A week from today in the morning to find, you know, essentially to provide aid and support
you're gonna
the evil homeless
their,
community.
Get on the waiting list and get a receipt?
Well, I don't even know if that's worth doing. But, yeah, I mean, if people want to do that, we'll find out what people want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take reports about people's property destruction or theft. We'll talk about phony tickets and or real tickets. Ticketing for sleep now costs $157. If you want to eliminate it before going to court, according to what I heard about a month ago.
How much is it in court?
And, well, I don't know. That's
if you let it slide, most just let it slide.
If you let it slide, it's they have a couple $100 more because it goes to collection.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to face the possibility that if you do that happens three times,
I'll warrant.
Then you will get a new crime charge, which is a misdemeanor crime, which will allow mm-hmm. for a warrant unless you show up in court to address it.
Your charge was a misdemeanor. Robert.
And any and I am charged with a misdemeanor, a different kind of misdemeanor. But every kind of an every subsequent infraction you get after you have been found to have not attended to three infraction tickets, and there are literally dozens of people that affects, who are not criminals, but are homeless people who sleep out at night or sat down on the sidewalk and run afoul of CSO Barnett, who I saw downtown throwing his weight around.
Each infraction is a misdemeanor. Then they should get a public defender at that point.
Well, they would, but people do not want to sit in jail for 30 days waiting for trial, or you know that's something that they just don't want to do. So they'll plead, and so it's all very well to talk about their legal options.
So what happens when they plead? I mean,
when they plead,
go to jail.
When they plead, they have to agree to do stay away orders. They have to agree to. It could be a stay away order from the entire town or the entire
That's
downtown.
Probably what they're looking for.
Programs. Yeah. I don't know if it's legal to have someone stay away from Santa Cruz, but you know, obviously, that's what groups like. Frankly, I think that's my impression. That's my fear. That what groups like Take Back Santa Cruz want to do,
or the Downtown Association,
that's
why
Harvey West
it's like that down there. They don't want people
or
down
the
there.
Santa Cruz neighbors, or Lynn Robinson's garden party, whoever you know. So, and I guess probably I'm showing a bit of my bias here because I do feel. I think it's actually been shown what Lynn's perspective is on homeless.
Well, she voted to shrink the sidewalk, right? She's one of the five that...
She did.
Yeah, I mean, everyone that you talk to, we talked at the table, unanimous were against those laws downtown. I mean, they just don't know what the city council is doing. That if we, you know, the people find out, these people should be thrown out of office, really.
I wish there were the votes to do that. I kind of disagree with though, Free. I don't.
Well,
think
they people don't hear. Like you said, nobody listens to Free Radio. The Sentinel's not going to tell the right, correct truth about what's going on.
Well, I think a lot of people who might even disagree are afraid to raise their voices. I mean, I know that the Occupy movement was essentially devastated by the. It was probably devastated not so much by the prosecutions of the Santa Cruz 11 as by the police actions destroying the camp and the Occupy movement on December 4th and December 8th of 2011, and that was followed up by the phony charges against the Santa Cruz 11 for conspiracy to vandalize and conspiracy to trespass mm-hmm. and things like that. Let's hear a little more, while this is a fresh tape, from another activist, another Food Not Bombs activist up on campus, talking about the arrests. Although, I think, you know, I think I may hold off on that because it's a little...
Almost over. You sure it's almost over?
Almost over. It's a little repetitive, so I think maybe the best thing to do is to mention a few things coming up. On Sunday, I'm going to have a special guest, Michael Schmidt. Schmidt is an activist who comes from a very conservative background. Oh, actually, it's hard to say. He actually was a protester against the Vietnam War and talked about organizing protests in the 60s. And he actually advised me over lunch. I haven't seen him for a decade, but I saw him again.
Is he local?
He's very local. He was the CEO for the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, okay.
Or the Boardwalk. I'm not sure which. One of the two. He was very. You would think he was a very conservative fellow, and in many ways, he is. He's a family man. He's an older guy.
He's in Santa Cruz, though, so you know a lot of radicals moved here.
He was a radical guy at one time, and he also became upset when he saw a vet being harassed by the police about 14 years ago, crossing the bridge between Denny's and Highway 1, Highway 9 interchange. And he...
You mean the freeway bridge? Because there wasn't a footbridge.
There wasn't a footbridge. Yeah. Yeah, it was the freeway bridge. Everybody walked across the freeway bridge.
Yeah.
And between the homeless lack of services center.
Which is against the law.
It was against the law.
Yeah.
And so he saw this vet being harassed, and he himself is a vet, I think. I think I'm not mistaken on that. And he helped... We got in touch with each other somehow, much to the chagrin of the progressive establishment who regarded him as sort of the Boardwalk's chief booster, and I'm no fan of the Boardwalk, I'll tell you. And we formed a group called the Homeless Working Group, and we made sure that every single candidate running in the 2000 election in November spoke before our group, and we either endorsed them or we didn't. I don't recall what the... I think that was... Mm-hmm. I think Steve Argy was running. We endorsed him that time. He's a very radical activist.
He still is.
And he's still... Well, he hasn't done too much lately, but he does write about... He does write about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He helped... He took a very strong stand against the sleeping ban. And he went to conservative groups, and he would talk about the sleeping ban and how stupid it was, how expensive it was, how senseless it was. Like you push squeezing a balloon, the balloon goes somewhere else.
Stupid.
You know, and how inhumane it was, and how torturous it was.
How unconstitutional it is as well. You have a right to sleep. Come on.
Right, yeah. And so, and he wouldn't just go to the indifferent or the committed, which is the people I generally talk to.
Mm-hmm.
He would go to the hostile. And he would talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of respect for his willingness to do that, particularly since I think he may have suffered some consequences for that. He wasn't...
Got fired or something?
I don't know if he got fired, but, you know, he said he's also a pretty savvy kind of character and pretty, you know, good humored, pretty stable, a lot of family ties, as I understand it, and a lot of background in a series of professional venues. I'm not sure what they are.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be on the air on Sunday. He'll be here on Sunday morning starting at 10.
And what's he going to be talking about?
And we're going to talk about the sleeping ban. We're going to talk about the changes. We have some differences of opinion. He thinks that...
You said he was upset about something that he came and talked about.
Well, he was originally upset about the fact that the police were harassing homeless people.
Right, but I mean just recently.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, recently he has written letters that upset me because I was concerned he was taking a Take Back Santa Cruz line around issues like he has said that he feels there should be residency requirements, for example, and priorities for receiving services at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which I think is bullshit. I mean, I'm
not sure if that's constitutional.
And, you know, I mean, if it were a question of really a scarcity of resources, that would be one thing. But I don't think there is such a scarcity. I think there is a huge amount of money, and this was shown by the work of Gary Johnson recently, who has done... a massive job, or maybe it's just an easy job for him. Because
it's a lot easier than you guys doing it by hand.
He's good on a computer. And in looking at the police stats on the amount of tickets issued against homeless people that have been put forward as the evidence of a homeless crime wave.
Yep.
And it turns out when you look at these, and I looked at 1 year's worth of these tickets, 75%, 60%, somewhere in there, were for sleeping or for camping.
Now, I wanted to ask you, what exactly did you ask for? All the arrests or any kind of... Did you narrow that in
any
way?
You know, I... My exact wording escapes me. I think I was looking for all the arrests, but I think I was also relating to what Deputy Chief Clark presented to the homelessness study session, which became then the basis for the task force to examine, you know, the Citizens Task Force on Public Safety, mm-hmm. which I call the Public Hysteria Task Force.
Because it's critical. I mean, if you got all the arrests, then he's, because it's all in a database now. He can do queries and look at any kind of, you slice and dice it any way you want to look at it.
Well, I'm the concern that I did not get all the arrests. I sent back a second request, I think, asking for all the arrests right. and citations over the last 2 years.
There you go.
And also to find out more specifically all the arrests and citations for the sitting ban. Actually, this is what John Colby looked for in the downtown area, because the point there was to show the sitting ban arrests are all for homeless people, or mostly for homeless people. And well, therefore, it has certainly a selective effect, if not
right.
intended selective.
But to get all, you want to get all of them, because then you know exactly what the percentages are for each type of crime.
That too, and of course the costs would be good too. But the point here is, of course, that there's
costs are hard to get, hard to quantify.
But all this is really about the issue of, do you need a residency requirement? If we had to do real triage, you know, if there was no medicine, if we were, you know, running out of food, it would be one thing. But that's not the case. And that's the whole problem with, you know, the...
It interferes with your right to travel.
The Republican Democrat establishment that, you know, somehow claims that we have some sort of scarcity problem in this country. We don't. I mean, it's true that, you know, the resources are being depleted and abused, but basic resources like shelter and food.
There's plenty of it.
I believe that we have to fairly say there's plenty of it.
There's houses sitting empty because the banks own them all, you know.
You know, there's plenty of empty buildings, and they are the crime, as Becky Johnson so concisely put it in her.
Well,
in her sticker.
Also, someone told me in Europe, I mean, you can you know, camp on somebody's front yard or something for one night, you know. It's not on you. I mean, if you have to cross somebody's property to get off your property, you can do that. I mean, it's not unheard of. The land is not sacred.
Different. No, there's also a couple things coming up tonight. I should have mentioned it earlier at 7:30. Daniel Sheehan giving a $15 talk up at the High Street Church. 900 High Street, $7 for students, and who knows, you might be able to kind of slip in. I understand that Brent Adams' $45 fundraiser was some people got in without paying a lot of money, and indeed there were some problems with the fundraiser. What I learned from Brent at the meeting, and thank you again, Brent, for videoing what went down at that Tuesday City Council meeting with this phony arrest, is that they had a lot of good social interaction, and 60 people attended, but they were, and maybe even 60 people paid, I don't know, but even the $40 per person did not result in them getting out of the red, because mm-hmm. it was cost so much to do the catering. It was a fancy deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Brent is, you know, he's ever optimistic about getting permits for a camp out in early May, you know, that will show the community that homeless people can camp with community members. I thought that was shown quite clearly by the Occupy movement.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that, you know, relatively speaking, people were, there are problems, but I would say there are far less problems in the Occupy campground than there were, considering the same number of people, spread throughout the town.
The merchants loved it because all the homeless were at the Occupy.
Were they? Did they? I mean, I don't know. I never talked
about
it.
That's what I heard. I mean,
really?
I just heard from Sub Rosa.
it sounds like a possibility. I don't know if it's actually true.
Well, I mean, it's because there's nowhere else to go.
Prospect.
I mean, you get kicked out of the shelter, so where else are you going to go? They harass you in the parks. So a lot of them end up downtown.
Right, and actually there was less systematic harassment in 2011, mainly because there was pushback too.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were more worried about Occupy. That was
right, but also Occupy people were concerned to some extent with supporting homeless people's rights, and mm-hmm. so the police had to be aware that they were under some scrutiny there. And so,
there's cameras going.
we went to city council. We marched to the city manager's office. We were engaged in in fight back and push back. And that's an important thing to do.
It is. There should always be pushing back. Constant. Like you said, I mean, a 2-day strike isn't enough to really push hard. The same with protests.